God is with us. God is with us. God is with us. What do you hear in that pronouncement? Do you hear words of comfort, of a kind and compassionate presence in the midst of a time of difficulty, pain, trouble? God is with us. Or do you hear words of assurance in a time of uncertainty when the path before you is not clear? God is with us. Or words of confidence, even perhaps overconfidence, spoken by someone who knows, who insists they know the right way, and that they are committed to following it unquestioningly. God is with us. This is Advent, and Advent is a season of preparing the way for God's arrival into our lives and into our world. We long for God to show up, to bring us salvation, to liberate the oppressed, to save us from ourselves, from our own greed, our own injustices, our own hard-heartedness, to save us from sin and death. Christians believe that Jesus is God showing up. And perhaps Anabaptists in particular emphasize that when we look at the way Jesus walked in his time on earth, by looking at Jesus, we can get a glimpse, we can gain insight into who God is and into what God's salvation looks like. Advent for me is a time to practice placing my hope in the coming of Jesus. A time for me to learn how to put my trust in walking the way Jesus walked as I seek God's face and I seek the salvation of God, the redeeming justice of God. What does it mean to practice faith, to practice putting trust in the way of God? What I've learned about trust, I've learned in seasons of life when it seemed that I could not count on things going well or going according to plan. It's when those things that you are used to relying upon cease to be reliable for you that you're given the opportunity to practice walking by faith. The gospel reading in the lectionary for this morning presents us with the story of Mary's pregnancy through the eyes of Joseph, who we're told is a righteous man, or a person who embodies justice. For both Mary and Joseph, this pregnancy is a clear example of things not going according to plan. Joseph and Mary have their lives planned out. They're engaged to be married. We can only really speculate about their ages and their life before this, but they might have become engaged at a relatively young age, maybe quite a while ago. Engagement in their culture was a really big deal. Even though they hadn't come together to live in the same household yet, they had already been through a formal ceremony. There was already a binding legal contract of marriage. That's why the text here says that it calls Joseph Mary's husband. And many English translations say that when Joseph learns that Mary is pregnant, he plans to divorce her. Joseph and Mary have plans for a normal life, plans for a life that follows the scripts that they've been given by their families, by their society, by their culture. And then God interrupts. The wind of God blows into their lives and troubles the waters. Mary's pregnancy, we the readers know, is from the surprising and unpredictable movement of God in the world. Joseph discovers this a little later on in the story. For all of us, in our various family cultures, from our various backgrounds, our society gives us scripts to follow. These scripts tell us how to behave, what to expect from other people, what to expect out of life. You harvest what you plant, as the traditional wisdom says. And we learn to praise the people who follow these scripts as the successful ones, the good ones, the smart ones, the lucky ones. But sometimes the scripts don't work for us. Life often happens, and not the way that it's supposed to happen. Your marriage wasn't supposed to fall apart. Your loved one wasn't supposed to die so early. You weren't supposed to be forced to live with a chronic disease. You weren't supposed to have to deal with this intense conflict in your family. You weren't supposed to have trouble finding a stable, well-paying job. You weren't supposed to lose your home. Your life just wasn't supposed to be so complicated. Our scripts can fail us not only when we face personal crisis and personal hardship, but sometimes loving our neighbors and loving our family members requires us to go off script, to deviate from the straightforward, simple path that we were taught to walk through life, to take an alternate route. Frankly, our scripts, as useful as they are sometimes, weren't really written to include the totality of the rich diversity of human identity and human experience. In our gospel story today, the first moment when Joseph goes off script is his decision to call off his engagement to Mary quietly. To provide a little context, perhaps, for Joseph's choice here, Deuteronomy chapter 22 seems to give a husband the legal right to have his wife publicly executed if it's proven that she wasn't a virgin when the marriage was consummated. The patriarchal assumptions behind this law are really problematic, but I'm not going to get into that right now. I would question the assumption that some preachers on this text seem to make that Joseph would have been in a position to have this sentence carried out against Mary at his whim. We don't really know how common it would be in first century Judean culture for an accusation of a capital offense to be able to meet the rather strict evidence requirements necessary for conviction in the eyes of the Jewish community leaders. But nevertheless, Joseph is presented here in the story as acting compassionately towards Mary when he doesn't have to, by attempting to avoid publicly shaming her. And this compassionate intention, we're told, is an illustration of the narrator's statement that Joseph is a righteous man, a just person. Joseph indeed gives us, as readers of Matthew's gospel, our first glimpse into Matthew's theology of justice and righteousness. Being upright, being a just person, doesn't mean staying the course in a predetermined path, the righteous path, that's been laid out before you by society and its expectations. A just person in God's eyes is not someone who just blindly adheres to the rules. Rather, a person who is just and righteous is responsive, sensitive, aware, compassionate. The just person is able to change course, to adapt to the demands of loving their neighbor as themselves. Biblical justice here, as Joseph embodies it for us, doesn't mean demanding retribution. It doesn't mean imposing a penalty on someone. Joseph seems to be thinking about Mary's status and about her well-being in the context of their shared community life together. He seems to consider how his actions are going to affect her. He intends to act in a way that shows concern not merely for his own honor, but that shows concern for Mary's welfare. Joseph is one who seeks to love God and love neighbor. One of my favorite musicals is Les Miserables. The contrast between the two leading characters in this musical, on the one hand, the by-the-book police inspector Javert, and on the other hand, the ex-convict on the run and former bread thief, Jean Valjean, these two represent different pictures of righteousness and justice. For Javert, the policeman, following the path of the righteous means adhering to the law, never wavering or departing from that clearly defined path. The path of righteousness for Javert is like the unchanging courses of the stars in the night sky. Javert is always confident that he is on God's side, and he never questions his course. But for Valjean, on the run after breaking parole, his path of redemption is full of twists and turns. For example, just as Valjean has successfully established himself with a new identity in a respectable social position, he's confronted with a choice. Does he speak up to save another person's life at the cost of losing everything that he's gained? Or does he remain silent in order to protect himself and maintain his own freedom? Valjean's path throughout the story brings him into encounters with God. His story illustrates how when you find yourself in a place on your life's journey that requires you to go off script, to step out in faith, you may find yourself asking God to make a way for you in the wilderness. The thing about traveling in the wilderness is there aren't usually signs telling you which way to go. Although you might find a burning bush sometimes when you're not looking. Following the way of God involves leaving behind the security of what you know and taking on the risk of walking into strange, unknown territory without being sure where you're going to end up. When you walk in the wilderness, you have to find a new frame of reference. You have to find different landmarks to help you navigate life. So back to Joseph. Joseph has already shown us in this gospel story that he embodies a compassionate justice that makes minor course corrections as needed in order to take the needs and the well-being of others into account. But then things really go off script in Joseph's story when he has an apocalyptic experience. That is, the veil gets pulled back and Joseph is shown a glimpse of what God is doing in the cosmos to bring about the recreation of the world and the restoration of God's people. Reminiscent perhaps of Joseph's namesake, the wise dreamer and interpreter of dreams in the book of Genesis, chapters 37 to 41, bringing to mind also the apocalyptic visions of Daniel later in the Jewish scriptures. Joseph here has an angelic visitor come to him in a dream. And so the word of the Lord comes to Joseph, challenging him even further to step outside of the box, outside of his expectations, calling him to wade further into the troubled waters where God's Spirit is moving. Joseph, son of David, don't be afraid, the angel says. Don't be afraid. Fear is a natural response and can be a significant obstacle to acting justly, especially when the right thing you're called to do requires you to go far off script. God calls Joseph to trust God without understanding. Because do you really think Joseph can grasp this idea that the child that she's carrying is conceived by the Holy Spirit? I don't think I can grasp what that means. Marry the woman, Joseph. Give legitimacy to her son. By the act of giving him a name, make both of them part of your family, the royal family of David. Trust God is at work here, doing a new thing. Like Abraham and Sarah, trust and follow without really knowing where this is all going to lead. But this is what's going to happen, Joseph. Mary, she's going to have a son. And you, Joseph, your job is to give him a name. Call him Jesus or God's salvation. That's what's coming into the world here. And the boy, he's going to save his people collectively, corporately, save his people from their sins. Joseph doesn't get any spoken lines in this story or anywhere in the New Testament for that matter. We just see him carry out his instructions. His just character, his faith, his love of God and neighbor, preparing him to respond to the angel's good news with faithful action. Joseph's Christmas announcement does not save him from the messiness of life. Receiving this message from the angel doesn't deliver him from hardship or injustice. Quite the opposite. It disturbs his life, and it sends him and his new family on a journey into the wilderness. Later, quite literally, as they're on the run for their lives from the wicked King Herod and forced to abandon their home. Yet the gospel writer tells us here, as disruptive as this new pregnancy is to Joseph and Mary's lives, it says, they will call him Emmanuel, a reminder that God is with us. Matthew tells his readers the birth of Jesus is a sign. God is with us. So I ask you again, what does that pronouncement that God is with us mean? Consider, for the original audience of the Gospel according to Matthew, who were Christian communities with strong ties to Jewish scripture and Jewish tradition, living probably within one or two decades of the year 70 in the Common Era, for these ancient Christians, whether or not God is with us is a live question. In the year 70, the Romans came in and they destroyed Jerusalem and they destroyed the temple. These events would have been at least as recent in time and fresh in the memories of Matthew's audience as events in New York City in September 2001 would be for most Americans today. The temple was the traditional representation of God's presence with God's people. The temple was linked back to the stories of the Ark of the Covenant in the days of Moses, to the pillar of cloud and fire traveling along with Israel in the wilderness. So Matthew's audience is asking, is God really with us? Where? Where is God's salvation in our world? Did the organized violence and the systematic oppression of the Roman Empire defeat God? Did it remove God's presence out of the world? Matthew's answer to this question is not only here in the birth narrative at the start of the gospel, but also in its very last verse in Matthew 28, where Jesus says, look, I myself will be with you every day until the end of the present age. I will be with you. Matthew wants to encourage the early church to have confidence that yes, God is with us. But what does living by faith, practicing trust in the Christmas message, God is with us, look like? What does that look like for followers of Jesus then and now? While the promise that God is with us bookends the Gospel of Matthew, what we have approximately in the middle of that gospel in Matthew chapter 16, verses 21 through 26, is Jesus telling his followers that he's going to suffer. He's going to be put to death by the powers that be in Jerusalem. And anyone who wants to be one of Jesus' followers must say no to themselves, take up their cross and follow me. All who want to save their lives will lose them. All who lose their lives because of me will find them. In other words, followers of the way of Jesus, the way of the one named God's salvation, should expect to be called to go off script, to live by faith, and not to have an easy road to walk. But if we're following the way of Jesus, then just like Israel walking in the wilderness, following that pillar of cloud and fire, we can be sure that God is right there with us. Many of us are looking around in our world today, searching for signs of God's presence. In the midst of political upheaval, of war, of ecological disaster, of the ongoing oppression of the poor by the wealthy and the powerful, and in the midst of our own personal grief, anxiety, uncertainty, perhaps the message of Matthew's gospel for us today is that we, like Joseph, have a part to play in the coming of God and God's salvation into our world. By our willingness to practice trust, our willingness to live justly, to be compassionate and aware and responsive, giving due concern to the well-being of our vulnerable neighbors, by our willingness to take risks and not to let the scripts we've internalized constrain us from just, loving, faithful action. God is with us. May you walk by faith into the world in the footsteps of Jesus.